The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Tuesday RotoWire MLB podcast. I, if you can tell, am not Jeff Erickson. Jeff is still in Ireland with the family, having a great time. We'll be back with us soon enough. But I'm here with my old fantasybaseball.com partner, Fred Zinke. Man, was it 15, 16 years ago that we were, I think we spent at least 1 year together on the site.
Yeah, one or two. 15 years ago, I think it was. I think it was 2007.
Yeah.
Where I read the book Fantasyland while on a vacation and decided that I wanted to work in the fantasy baseball industry and sent an email to – I got a junk email. I guess you call it junk email, a mass email from fantasybaseball.com saying they were looking for news writers. And everything started there with you.
I wouldn't. I think that email was probably sent out by before I got brought on.
Okay.
Because I didn't do it. but Fantasy Planet purchased Master Ball, and then we were together for at least 1 year.
Yep.
I left a year early. Kind of left you and Perry and a couple other people in charge. Relaunched Master's Ball, but you said I answered the email. I didn't bring you in this interview. You were finding a way in regardless. Right. I mean, you were going to come in, but you were going to find a way regardless. I mean, I just happened to be me that did the first answer, but you were finding a way one way or another. So, but anyway, you've been out driving around for a couple hours, maybe missed a game this afternoon, but there's been some news and not
a lot of news. Good. Yes. You know? A lot of news and a lot of bad news. So everybody bear with us. We're not going to have a lot of good news at the start of the podcast, but it's necessary news. And it is good news for some people who can maybe capitalize on it in the right way.
Right. So we'll start with something that happened last evening. And that's Ozzie Albies hurting his foot. Didn't foul the ball off his foot, right? It was kind of a weird swing and a weird twist. And it really wasn't a pull. He actually fractured it. And he's going to be out a couple of months. I'm a heavy guy. I can do that sort of thing. It surprised me that Albies, that's how he hurt himself.
Yeah, so already placed on the 60-day IL. So we know it's going to be at least 2 months. So you're not going to see him till mid-August at the absolute earliest. And of course, 60-day IL doesn't always, or doesn't even usually, I guess sometimes it does mean 60 days, but often it's more than that. Orlando Arcia is in at second base tonight. I don't think he's much of a pickup type option. If you have Albies, I think you're looking somewhere else other than Arcia. And I'm going to say that I will give Arcia credit in a really small, really, really small sample size this year. He's played well. So he maybe gets a little bit of an opportunity. I think Albies has to be dropped in all leagues that don't have IR space, unlimited IR space, or you have IR spaces and they're not being used. I think you have to drop Albies everywhere. Do you agree with that, Todd?
Yeah, I know we get a little bit too NFP centric around here, but with seven reserves and no IL and a speculative closer and a couple streaming pitchers and enough batters to help you out on the 2 day a week moves, you need every spot you can get.
Yep.
And Albies is a difference maker, but you can't wait for him because when he comes back on September 1st, whatever it might be, you're going to be in third, fourth, fifth, sixth, eighth place, and it's not going to help you. So it takes a real special batter for me to agree or say, no, you should draw. When to say, no, keep him. It takes a really special hitter. And I don't know if one exists. I mean, you know, along these lines, we've got a question now in the chat. Ray from Philly asking about Strasburg on my IL. Now, if you have limited IL spots, you hold them until there's someone else that comes along. But it does sound like, I mean, he's got repercussions from the thoracic outlet surgery. So I'm not counting on Steven Strasburg for anything this year. Are you, Fred?
No, I think he's an easy drop right now. I think Albies is kind of an easy drop. Like you said, like without getting too NFBC centric, like most of the CBS, Yahoo, ESPN leagues have limited IL slots, IL slots, something like that. So, I mean, if you have two IL slots on your fantasy team and they're not being used right now by players who will be back in less than 2 months, then you're doing really well from a luck perspective. So I just don't think you can hold him. Strasburg, I would have absolutely no interest in holding. Like I would have to have unlimited IL slots to even consider him. I don't think we're going to get anything out of him this season. I worry about getting anything out of him for the rest of his career at this point. Like the velocity was way down. You talked about thoracic outlet surgery. I don't know. We're at the point now. So in the last three seasons, he's thrown 31 and a third innings in 3 years. I know he was great. I know he laid it all on the line in the 2019 season, in that World Series season. I worry that he's done.
Yeah, Alcantara throws that many innings in a week. Now, with thoracic outlet, we don't have as much information as, say, Tommy John, but short-term prospects are usually okay with thoracic outlet, but it's long-term. Mm-hmm. But we're still – I mean, he's not fully recovered. So I think Strasburg, unless you have unlimited ILs, is a go. The only other small fantasy implication with Ozzy Albies is it clears up the five-hole. Which, you know, you want a top five batter, if at all possible. That's what the numbers show you get the most fantasy production. Travis d'Arnaud hit fifth tonight. He's hit fifth a few other times. Marcelo Zuna moved up to sixth. That's what I'm keeping my eye on more than anything, is to see which of these Atlanta hitters moves up to the five hole. Because, maybe you don't score as many runs, but your RBIs go up. And that's more for a DFS or a daily league to see who's betting there. But that's really, at least at this point, the only other fantasy implication I can see.
Yeah, you mentioned Ozuna, who's off to a slow start this year, but has hit some homers in the last couple of days. So maybe he gets a chance to get back into the five hole because at the beginning of the season, he's predicted to be somewhere in the top four or five in the lineup. It's good for Dansby Swanson, who was already their regular number two hitter, but at least this takes away probably even if he had a bad couple weeks at some point. He's homered again already tonight. So,
yeah,
I mean, he's doing fine, but it does take away like the concern with Swanson at the beginning of the season is that he would hit low in the lineup. He's earned his way up to a high spot in the lineup. They did have Albies hanging around who could have switched with him. Now that's not going to happen.
Right. Exactly. I haven't checked it. I should have already checked. Juan Soto, he's back to playing, right? He hurt his knee, but he's back in the lineup again. There was some news about Fernando Tatis. Did you happen to catch that?
I did. So looks like he's not ready to go to the next stage, next progression in his rehab. So didn't get good news. Not clear to start swinging. So I think anyone who drafted Tatis thinking, hey, maybe this guy could be on the early end of his timetable. As Scott Pianowski likes to say, injury optimism is not your friend. And I'm paraphrasing. I don't think he exactly says it like that, but that's the message, that injury optimism is not your friend. So this is another case of that. I think if you drafted Tatis with the expectation that he wouldn't be back until July, maybe even the All-Star break, then you're still fine. But if you were hoping for an earlier time, if you were looking at him and thinking, come on, he's so young, you know, healthy type guy, he's going to recover from this on the early end of the timetable. Maybe I get him back by the middle of June. Well, it looks like you're still, if he's not clear to swing, it looks like you're probably at least 3 weeks away, if not more.
Yeah. Big question though. I mean, using the 7-man reserve, no IL, is he a drop now with this news in NFBC type leagues, TGFBI, et cetera?
I feel like it's a little bit of in for a dime, in for a dollar, or maybe throwing good money after bad at this point, where if you took him, if I took him and held him this long, like I think I'd have to have a lot of red in my lineup. I do have a team like that where I have so much red in my lineup that maybe I would have to drop him. I don't think so. I think at this point, I still got to hold him. Different than Albies. Like Albies is a really good player. But he hadn't been special so far this year. Like Tatis is on another level where, again, now I'm getting injury optimism, but right, like he could return at the All-Star break and be a top five fantasy player or something after that point. So I think if I'm in, I think I've got to hold him. If he was dropped in one of my leagues, I would be very aggressive in trying to pick him up.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he'd be pot committed. I think that the bigger difference is you drafted Tatis knowing this was the scenario. You drafted him knowing you were running with a six-man reserve.
Yes.
So you should have been smart about position eligibility or just drafting closers so you don't have to worry. But, you know, you should have done something to make that six-man reserve more manageable. So, if you have to wait another extra couple of weeks at this point, I think you have to do that. We're kind of burying the lead, though, here as far as major injuries go. And this one caught me off guard. I guess I should have been thinking about it, but Liam Hendricks to the IL with that dreaded, you don't want to hear, forearm strain.
Yeah, it looks like right now they're hoping for 3 weeks or so. I've seen 2 weeks thrown out. I don't really buy that. I think they're hoping for 3 weeks. This one's scary. We're talking about a closer who went in the second round of a lot of drafts, the third round of any drafts where he didn't go in the second round. He's been good so far, just what you expected. Like he's leading the AL in saves with 16. His ERA is below 3. He's on pace for, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 strikeouts. Everything had been good, even with some ups and downs along the way. If you get him back in 3 or 4 weeks, they use him heavily. If you get him back in 3 or 4 weeks, he could still end up being a top five closer this year. But this one is if you don't have Kendall Graveman, who I don't think is the automatic replacement for him, but is the most likely replacement, then I think this one's a really scary one for those who have have Hendricks.
Yeah, you mentioned the usage. I'm glancing at the log now. He really hasn't been used excessively over the past, let's even call it month. He's only been, only had 4 appearances this month, but it's a cumulative effect. They hit May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, and then again in the 6th and 7th and 9th. So we could be seeing a delayed reaction to overuse of a month ago. It finally caught up to him, something of that nature. But yeah, that's a big one. Whether, I've got him in a keeper league. If you've got Liam Hendricks, you probably don't have a lot of other backup save options on your squad. So you mentioned Kendall Graveman. Aaron Bummer is on the IL right now.
Yep.
Joe Kelly. Yeah, right. They really, for a bullpen that we thought was there, the White Sox depth was really hurt with Garrett Crochet went out at the beginning of the season because he was kind of like two relievers, you know?
That's so, right. I think with Graveman, like, he hasn't been great. His whip's 133. That being said, he, other than Michael Kopech, who's in the rotation, Graveman has the lowest ERA on the team. So, so he has some closer experience. He's got the lowest ERA on the team. He's healthy. I don't really see a lot of other. I think he's in. And Tony La Russa is kind of old school. I feel, well, kind of. Tony La Russa is very old school.
You had me at old.
Yeah. So I feel like he's the kind of guy to just turn to the next most obvious closer because that's the way we kind of used to do things. Like, sure, you could think outside the box. You could see if Reynaldo Lopez, you know, could be your closer or someone like that, Matt Foster or something. And then you keep Graveman in other roles where, and, you know, move him around how you can, you know, most get the most value out of him. I don't really see La Russa as that kind of guy. I see La Russa as the kind of guy to just look through his depth chart and think, you know, who's been pitching the eighth inning, who's been in high leverage situations, who's got the lowest ERA, and that's Graveman. So I feel like there will be aggressive Graveman bidding where he is available on the weekend.
Yeah, I get a feeling La Russa is going to call down and ask for Craig Kimbrel. And say we did when, and yeah. So they we shall see. Before we move on along the lines of drop or keep on injured players, I think this one's an interesting one. Came to us over on Twitter from Mike Tracy. Freddie Peralta.
Drop.
I agree that he's a drop just because I'm managing pitching. And I need that spot to manage pitching. I'm much more apt to hang on to a thin thread of a batter than I am a pitcher.
I think he's a drop. Like Strasburg, you just get off your roster. I think guys like Peralta and Ozzie Albies, they're drops in the sense of, like, I guess I wouldn't drop them if there was nothing
right
on waivers that interests me at all. You know, but other than that, and maybe if I really didn't have any injury issues other than those players, so I felt like my bench was pretty strong. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't drop Peralta just for the sake of dropping him, but that probably wouldn't be the case. If there's someone I just wanted to pick up, maybe you like Graham Ashcraft or someone like that, and you just want to get it, you got a guy you like, and you just want to get him on your team, I would look at Peralta as the guy to get rid of. Yeah.
Not for Connor Pilkington, though. Yeah, no, I agree. And who knows? I guess Milwaukee will be sticking. I didn't like them on the six-man rotation, you know, costing Woodruff starts and costing Burns starts. With all the injuries, it's really not happening. But speaking of pickups, I know you and Jeff like to review your high stakes and your TGFBI, et cetera, pickups from the weekend. Who are you clicking on the most?
Well, this didn't go well at all, but I grabbed some Ronnie Garcia for his two-start week. The first start didn't go well. It didn't go that terribly. He could still have a solid start on the weekend. He's at home on the weekend against the Rangers. That could go okay. But the first one didn't go great. But he kind of looked the part. He had a good strikeout-to-walk ratio. I was looking for five innings. He had two home starts. The White Sox, who have a lot of injuries. The Rangers, who aren't a great offense. You know, to me, that felt like a worthy gamble. And then the other guy we grabbed in a couple leagues, and I know Scott and Toby talked about him on Sunday night, was Braxton Garrett. And I didn't necessarily put him in the lineup because he's at the Mets this week. I'm not sure if there'll be anything there, but there's enough intriguing about him to just spend a few dollars on and put him on the bench for a week. And let's see how he does against the Mets next week.
No, I was with you. To me, Miami has entered that realm of just kind of trust. You like the park. You like the team. They've had some decent success with some of their arms that I'm kind of with you there. I spent the better part of Sunday finding replacements for Andrew Kittredge, Colton Wong, and Tyler Stevenson. So I didn't get to take a whole lot of speculative bids. I had a lot of Kittredge. I was able to get Tanner Houck somewhat surprisingly, but I got Jason Adam as well in a couple of places. I'm sure just, you know, from following in general and keeping your eye on the AL East, you kind of have a feel now that the Red Sox will be using Houck as their closer, but Alex Cora is still hesitant to use him on back-to-back days.
Yeah, so I actually did get Hauk in a 12-team league for $23, which I felt like was – I always felt like I was more just price enforcing at $23 in a 12-team NFBC. But as you know, 12-team leagues are really funky for waivers, and someone can go for 101 league and four in the other. So anyways, I felt really excited about getting him. I think Hauk – I don't know. You're more plugged into the Red Sox than I am. I feel like from now till the trade deadline – at least he's got to be the heavy favorite to lead them in saves, right?
Oh yeah, but again, he's the closer. But
right, and Alex they won't necessarily Cora, go back to back.
Yeah, and it showed over the weekend on Saturday night when the Hansel Robles blew the save in between the Friday and the Friday and the Sunday win. I thought anyway that maybe he was holding Tanner Houck for the bullpen game on Sunday. And he was just to close it, not to open it. So, yeah, if he didn't use him that Saturday night, he wasn't going to use him. Actually, it was a pretty good weekend as far as, I mean, we'll see what happens. But I got John Birdie in a lot of places to replace Colton Wong. And I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that I stick Wong back in there if Birdie's still playing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I worried. I held back a bit on Birdie. Worried a little bit about his playing time when Joey Wendell comes back. You know, Birdie's been amazing for fantasy, but I'm not sure if he's been good enough that, you know, that there's no way Wendell goes back in to get some of that playing time. But I mean, there's lots of ways he can play a lot of positions. There's lots of ways for him to get in the Marlins lineup. Actually, I was interested to ask you about pivoting to one of my teams. You said you had to find replacements for Tyler Stevenson. Did you bet heavily on Gabriel or not?
No, I was more into the Christian Betancourt. Using Adley Rutschman as a model. I know they're different type of hitters. Moreno's actually more of a contact type hitter, and maybe that's better at this point. But I'm not going to plant my flag on Christian Betancourt either. But he's got the job. He's playing first base, a little DHing as well. He's getting a lot of playing time. So that was more about that. I wanted the playing time, and Moreno's going to play. Kirk, as you know, I mean, you don't need to tell you what Toronto's going to do. Kirk's going to stay in the lineup, but catchers struggle. And I felt when Betancourt comes down from this over his skis, he's still going to be a useful second catcher.
I'm also assuming that Betancourt didn't cost near as much as Moreno.
Oh,
would've.
Right. Yeah,
like Moreno's like at least in some, I was surprised actually on how little he went for in some leagues. And I do think there's maybe now a bit of a bias against catchers, which is fair. Some of the young ones have like Rutschman haven't done well right off the top. My concern with Moreno was I'm just not sure what he's going to do. He had one homer so far this year with AAA Buffalo. There was no real power from him last year. Like he hit 8 homers in AA last year. He doesn't really steal bases. He did steal 3 already this year with Buffalo, but he's not really a base stealer. Like in his minor league career, he's never had a 10 steal season. So he's not really a base stealer. He's a high average hitter who doesn't strike out much. I think he's going to play a fair amount. I think he'll probably play about 4 games a week, which is totally good for a catcher. Maybe he gets in 5th game in a 7-game week. I think he could even, if he's hitting well, do that when Danny Jansen comes back, because the Jays kind of can rotate the DH slot and carry 3 catchers if they're all hitting well. But because there's no power there, I think there'll be power from him eventually. It's just not there yet. I had trouble justifying big bids. So, I bid, I don't know, 20, 12, things like that. None of those got him.
Yeah, it's like, Saya sounds like the AL version of Kybert Ruiz a little bit. But yep. I mean, I'm not the best at making comps of that nature, but that's kind of what he sounds like, at least hearing the words. Let's talk a little more pitching and maybe back to being a little bit of good news, depending upon your perspective, your fantasy or your real-life perspective. But Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer sound like they're throwing. It sounds like Scherzer's a little ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. And this to me is good news because kind of sounded scary with Brandon Woodruff losing feeling in his fingers, etc. But he's throwing again and could be on the fast track to returning. So just from a, pure, I'm glad he's healthy standpoint, it's good to see Woodruff coming back. when you saw the Woodruff news, you kind of, anytime there's actually a syndrome named after what he had, I get a little nervous.
I was very nervous, and I'm still not out of that those nervous woods yet. So it's good. Today's good news. I need to see more before I stop being nervous. Like you said, Scherzer's good news. I feel like even at his age, Scherzer's always going to beat a timetable. He's just that such a competitive guy. Hopefully, though, he can come back on time or early and then stay back. And then with all the problems with Tatis, I think this is good news on DeGrom, just that he seems to be mostly still on schedule. I mean, they never really gave him much of a schedule.
Right.
But if you were hoping for him somewhere around midseason, we seem to be kind of on schedule for that. He's throwing bullpen sessions. If that goes well, you could see him doing rehab starts. Who knows, maybe in 10 days or something like that. And maybe see him starting for the Mets in early July. And I think if you draft him before the injury, nothing's going to satisfy you. But if you drafted him after the injury in like round 15 or something, if you get him back in early July and he stays back, I think then you got what you bargained for.
Did you draft any Jack Flaherty and stash him? Because making his return tomorrow, right? He's going to be starting for the Cardinals. I'm still scared a little bit about Flaherty. I do not have any shares. Are you watching as a fan or as a fantasy interest?
A fan. No shares. Looks like tomorrow, if I had Jack Flaherty, I would not start him tomorrow. Looks like he's going to be limited to about 60 pitches. That's not going to be enough for him to get a win. Andre Pallant is going to come in after him, who sounds kind of more like a hockey player than he does a baseball pitcher. So he's going to come in after him. So Pallant actually has a good chance to get a win if Flaherty can get off to a good start in the game. Pallant's not an awesome pitcher, but he's got a nice ground ball lean. I kind of compared him to another Dakota Hudson, where he doesn't strike out enough batters to be very good, but he gets so many ground balls that he also isn't very bad. So, you know, he's probably in tomorrow's game by the third or fourth inning. And if he could, and he should be able to throw three or four innings if he's doing well. So maybe he gets a chance at a win. But I think for Flaherty, don't use him in fantasy, even if you have been stashing him all this time. I know it's hard to resist when you've been waiting, but you got to wait at least one more start.
Yeah. And it's interesting because St. Louis has a doubleheader today. That's and right. Matthew Liberatore started in the afternoon. Miles Michaelis is through six now. The bullpen is not being taxed today, which is, you know, odd to say after a doubleheader. So like you're saying, it's not like an all hands on deck scenario or Johnny bullpen game tomorrow. The Cardinals can use their guys. Did you happen to catch any of Liberatore's effort this afternoon?
I did not, and I wondered if it would be enough to maybe get him another start, but I don't know if it will. Like I could see him going back down to the minors. I don't know. We'll see, but I could see him going back down. This is better, but still, like, it's the Pirates. I don't know. I don't know if it's enough. Just with Flaherty coming back already, I could see – I've thought about this. Like, do you go out and pick him up? I think – we'll see what the Cardinals have to say, but I think you don't just yet. He's still also walked two or three batters in every start so far, and those have all been starts of five innings or less. So he's not dominating, including today. But he was better today.
Yeah, no, I caught a little bit of it. Looked more confident throwing strikes. You said mentioned face. It was a lesser lineup and kind of a doubleheader lineup, right? Where you're going to use your entire roster at this point. I mean, Cardinals have been using Packy Naughton. I'm not sure what the schedule lines up for, but I think Liberatore did show enough that he's next. And when you get Steven Matz, when he comes back, I mean, they're not a bastion of hell. Zach Thompson is the other guy that will probably stay in the rotation. Again, kind of pitched just well enough to get the next start. Mm-hmm. He's actually pitched better than the Pittsburgh Zach Thompson, which is surprising. Well, it's surprising, but the Zach with an H has been pitching a little bit longer this year. At least the same names, at least they have an H and a K. So when I run my VLOOKUP for DFS, because I can't use my database, at least I have different Thompson in that case, as opposed to Louis Garcia and Max Muncy and some of these other dual names. It wasn't on the agenda, if you will, but who cares? We're professionals. I know, again, you were out a little bit, but you probably had half an eye. I was on the patience with Yusei Kikuchi bandwagon, and that looks like it's backfiring. If he doesn't get it done against Baltimore tonight, It's going to be a hard argument to say it was a really good May, kind of fell off in June, and I expect a rebound. This is now three starts into June, which is making me look pretty bad.
Yeah, I think Kikuchi could be a drop right now in 12-team leagues. I don't know if he's a drop in 15s just because the starting pitcher pool is so tough in 15s that maybe you just have to hold him. I mean, you can't use him right now. Like, he struggled against Baltimore today. Four innings, nine base runners, two home runs, four runs allowed. Previous start was against the Royals. Like, that's another really soft landing. Couldn't get out of the first inning. The start before that was at home against the Twins. Okay, the Twins have a pretty good lineup. You know, he really struggled in that one. The start before that was at the Angels. He, five innings, two runs. Okay, that's not bad. 10 base runners. And only four strikeouts. That's not good. The previous start was against the Reds. They're not very good. He couldn't get through five innings. We're going all the way back to a home start against Seattle on May 16th, almost a month ago, for the last start that I would say from him that I would say was definitively good. He had a nice little kind of, yet, like you said, three start stretch there in early May that made look like he had maybe turned the corner, but he definitely hasn't. I wouldn't give up on him for like ever, but in a 12 team league, I might need to drop him.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, and he made some, sometimes this is a recognition by the website difference when it's slider and cutter, but it looked like he made a change to his arsenal and it was working. So you like to see something like that. Mm-hmm. And whether or not it was just, you know, just naming the pitch differently or classifying it differently, and it's still the same repertoire, he hasn't had the same results in June, and it's a little bit of a shame for people that would like to listen to my advice, because I was wrong. Anyway, Fred and I are going to come back and talk a little closers. We're required by law. It's a podcast. We have to talk closers. And then talk about some hitters and some pitching when we get back. But first, take a little bit of time for our sponsors to sell you something.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, we're back. All right, closers. Oh, man. I was on the wait for closers bandwagon. I'm not going to take a victory lap because of Liam Hendricks. You know, it's all who you draft, not why you draft him, right? I mean, every strategy works. Again, another Scottie P thing, another piano thing. It's not why, it's who. But I didn't want to invest that much in a closer. So every time you guys talk saves, Ryan Roof on the site, I'm right there with you guys trying to make sure that I get my saves up there. Emilio Pagan, Minnesota Twins. Are you buying in? If you have Pagan, is he a SPCL 1, 2, 3 for you? Is he in your lineup every week?
I think he's in your lineup every week. I think he's a 2 at best, though. ERA's fine, whips fine, strikeout rates fine, walks are a little high. Twins have been mostly using him as their closer. They still mix in other guys. That keeps him from being a 1. But I guess he's a 2. He's not their best reliever, I don't think. But whatever. He's got the closer's role, and he's good enough to hold on to it.
Yeah, and the Twins are a team that should put together some more wins as the season moves on, when you know, Joe Ryan gets back together, Bailey Ober. I think in the offense in general, that's a team that should have a better, at this point, final 100 games or so than you know, than the beginning of the season. So I'm kind of with you there. Maybe we should ask, wait for Jeff. But Hunter Strickland actually looked good last night getting the save. Recency bias, what are you doing with Hunter Strickland?
I'm staying disinterested for now. The Reds never really seem to settle on a closer. He has almost a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio this year. His ERA is 5.73. Yeah. He does have two saves in the last like 3 weeks or so, mixed in there. He's got a game where he gave up two runs, a game where he gave up one run, another game where he gave up one run, and he's got a game where he gave up three unearned runs. So it's not like he's been lights out at all. I think that bullpen just continues to – I don't think the Reds have any interest at all in finding a closer this year.
Yeah, and they're actually like 19-17 since that horrific start. Anybody – I mean, we talked a little about the Red Sox already. Are there any other bullpens that you're keeping an eye on or – kind of tracking to see?
Let's see. The Phillies. So disappointed on the weekend that I didn't get Sir Anthony Dominguez in a league where I wanted him. I put in a not that competitive bid. I should have gone higher. That's my one regret from Sunday night, was in one league where I could have used saves. I think I should have gone higher because Corey Knebel is, they keep saying that he's going to be fine. He's just shut down for a couple of days. Maybe they're right. Knebel has a lengthy injury history. Dominguez is pitching great this year. I think he's the obvious guy they turn to if Knebel goes down. So, and Dominguez got a win last night. They're in the midst of an 8-game week. He could probably get other high leverage opportunities this week, and the Phillies are playing better. So he's someone I wish I have no shares. And he's someone who I wish I had some shares in a couple leagues where I wanted him. I did not put in high enough bids. So it's my own fault.
Yeah. You know, I had to replace Kittredge, and I'm kind of weird. I just knew it was going to cost me more than I was willing to give up for Dominguez. It's kind of like, I don't want to let people know that, you know, I should have put in a keep me honest bid. I didn't. I'm not going to get him. I'm not even going to bid on him. That was kind of a dumb ploy on my part, because you never know. Yeah. But so I'm kind of with you there. And plus, I don't know, I just thought that replacing Kittredge with a Tampa guy, I thought the price would be more economical. And it was. But Dominguez could. All right. So Knebel's gotten two saves in his past two outings, neither of which are all that impressive. You know, he lucked into the first one, and it wasn't a clean one in the second one. So don't get fooled by getting saves in the last two. New manager, we just don't know what's going to go on as far as that goes. I know you wanted to talk about some hitters. Again, kind of in the dropper, or, you know, what are we expecting going forward? Who are some of the hitters that you're keeping an eye on or kind of wondering about? Do I play them in my 12 or play them in my 15? Who's kind of at the top of the Fred Zinke what to do with list?
An interesting one to me is Brendan Donovan on the Cardinals. He already has a couple hits tonight and a couple runs scored. He's batting second. He's eligible basically everywhere. Looking at his skill set, I wondered. So at the beginning of the year, I decided to plant a flag, and I was very positive about Stephen Kwan. Didn't go great, although he's actually been better the last little while. Kwan continues to have more walks than strikeouts. He just doesn't make the quality of contact to do a lot. And Kwan actually has a few steals now. He might get 10 steals this year. We'll see. He doesn't make great contact. Donovan's another guy who's similarly interesting to me. So he has one homer and two steals going into tonight and 116 at bats. So he's not doing much that way, but he's hitting .310. BABIP's a little high, but more walks than strikeouts, 20-18. You don't get a lot of guys with more walks than strikeouts. Cardinals have a good lineup. I'm interested in Donovan. Are you?
I am not uninterested, but I'm stuck on Cesar Hernandez. I know I shouldn't be. I've kind of log jam in the middle because I know Donovan can play a couple of different spots. I kind of mentioned Wong before. I'm a big fan of Colton Wong. I kind of have my fill of middlemen that I probably shouldn't be interested in anyway. Yeah. But you know, as an analyst, I am interested in Donovan because early in the year, you know, the lack of home runs and lack of stolen bases are a detriment, but it comes a time, we're getting close there, if not already, where, you know, having a pulse and playing every day is you know, paramount. You keep up those counting stats. All right, so you're not getting the homers, not getting the steals, you're getting some runs, some RBI, and if you give you some batting average, you can take a shot on someone else later. Where's Donovan eligible at this point? It's still – all right, so in traditional leagues with five games, he's got first, second, third, and short, and outfield.
Yep.
So it's pretty basically awesome. Yeah, basically everywhere. 10 games right now, it's second, third, and outfield. But once, if you got second, it's, you know, so you don't have shortstop yet, you can still probably figure out a way to get him in there. There, I mean, there's the advantage over Stephen Kwan, right? Yep. I mean, Kwan, you have to put him in the outfield. So I think that is kind of a – I mean, we talked about Joey Wendell. I prefer Joey Wendell because you do get a little bit of – Third piano reference tonight, category juice. Sorry, Scott, but yeah. you're a very quotable young man, Mr. Pianowski. Another guy I know you want to talk about, and I just wrote about him, is Christian Walker.
I mean, the power, yeah, so the power's there. I said that going into tonight, he sat 11th in the majors in homers, 36th in RBIs. But he's hitting 209. The BABIP luck has been, well, the BABIP luck on the surface seems like it's been terrible. So you just wrote about him. Is this just an example of bad BABIP luck? And this should really be a guy who's hitting 250, which was your 11th in the league in homers, hitting 250. And if you were hitting 250, you wouldn't be 36th in RBIs. You'd probably be 20th or 25th or something like that. That would make you a lineup lock, even in 12 team leagues. Like you're in, you're staying in almost no matter what. Is he that guy or are we not there yet?
He is for me, and it because his power spiked because he's hitting more fly balls. Mm-hmm. Now, that could be the reason why his BABIP's dropping, yep. Right? When the fly, you know, especially with the ball that's sprouting parachutes this year, they're staying in the park, and Arizona's kind of a big park now, or it's playing big with the humidor, although they've always had the humidor. Well, not always, but past 4 years. To cut to the chase, his BABIP on ground balls especially is low. So that should revert, you know, to normal levels. You know, gambler's fallacy, it's not going to get lucky, but even if it reverts to normal levels, the batting average comes back. So he's someone, even in a 12, and I had enough injuries that I was able to get Walker either at my corner or utility. And so he is someone, it's paid off so far this week. I think he had a home run begin the week, if I recall. So he is somebody that I am, you know, especially if I'm betting on the come a little bit because the underlying metrics portend a bit of a breakthrough.
Yep, I agree with you. And the other hitter that I wouldn't mind talking about, I don't know if you've looked at him much, but I looked at Marcus Semien because I find him to be one of the most interesting hitters so far this year. So he was awful during April and May. So far in June, a few days ago in Yahoo, he was their number one player of June so far. He's got five homers and five steals, and we're basically halfway through the month. He's hitting over 300 this month, so that all sounds really good. So the easy conclusion is that Marcus Semien's back, right? He was awesome last year. He's off to a slow start in Texas. Maybe it's the contract, new team, who knows? But maybe the rest of the way we're going to have him hit, if the rest of the way he could hit at a 30-homer pace, he steals a lot of bases from the top of their lineup. If he hits for average, we're golden. Maybe by the end of the year, you actually get some semblance of what you paid for. Then I looked a little more at his batted ball data from this month, and it actually isn't very good. It isn't any better than his batted ball data from the other months. I think his hard contact rate over at Fangraphs in June is the lowest of the 3 months so far, and it was really low. It's like 18% or something like that going into tonight. So I started off writing about Marcus Semien thinking I was going to be able to tell people he's turning around full steam ahead. By the time I was done the paragraph, it was kind of like, I don't know if he has turned things around. He's going to keep stealing bases because that's a way for him to contribute to the Rangers from the leadoff spot. But I don't know if he has turned things around. And I wonder if I had Semien in a trading league, if I might like to move him now on the premise that he's turned things around. Because if you could get something similar to the draft value you paid for him, probably a fourth round pick, I might get out if I could get some value like that right now.
I'll be honest, this isn't going to be a very fun discussion because I was never in.
Right.
You mentioned for a lot of the reasons that you talked about, the batted ball data isn't very good, mm-hmm. and it's never been very good. He is so dependent on hitting his home runs in the first quadrant, right down the line.
Yeah.
If you look at his distribution charts, all right, the argument, well, that's where he hits them. And if, you know, why shouldn't he continue to hit them in that area? Well, first, it is a new park, and it's compared, especially where he was last year, in all three of the parks he was at last year, the Globe Life Field, the down the line left field is a longer poke. To me, that's just less margin of error. If in order to hit your 30 homers, if 27 of them have to go between the foul pole and, 30%, 20% of the way over in left field, that doesn't leave you much margin of error. So I was never high on Semien to begin with. So if he gets back to that point, I'm still not fourth round for him. So I'm kind of with you. If you can get anything, if someone needs some speed, there's an easy sell. You can sell Semien. I'd like him as a ball player, a very good defender. I like second shortstops that are willing to go over and play second base and for the good of the team, if you will. I just think that's a good thing. But I think he was a little bit overdrafted to begin the season. And I'm, again, not going to take a lap, although I could use the exercise. I think that it's just that it's just so dependent on the pull home run.
Yeah. And his, like, so to just, there's some things we just go a little deeper on him. Like, so his batting average so far is only .226, but his BABIP's only .249, which is lower than any of his previous years. So it makes you think, okay, he just needs some better luck. But then when you get really geeky and going on his StatCast data, his average exit velocity so far this year is the lowest of his career. Barrel rate's down, hard hit rate's down. StatCast has him at a .214 XBA. So they actually are saying that his .226 batting average so far is a little bit fortunate given the batted ball data that he's been able to produce. So I think he's someone where you just have to look a little deeper before you buy low on him. I'm not, like you said, like I'm not convinced the power's back, and the trade-off to get that power would probably kill him elsewhere. I do think he will steal a fair amount of bases. I think that's a way he's trying to contribute to the Rangers without being a great hitter. He knows he has to provide value to that team with his contract. So I could see him stealing 25 bases this year, which would be tremendously valuable. Like, we know stealing bases is a bit of a choice. So I could see that. And that would salvage a lot of value. But I don't think if you could get him on a 25 homer pace for the rest of the way, that would be amazing. I just don't think it's going to happen.
See, 25 for the rest of the, I mean, that's kind of where I had. I mean, he had the happy fun ball year too, which his home run, his fly ball distance was in that sweet spot of, if he loses 5 feet, he's losing a disproportionate number of homers, which is another, has to do with where he hits him, et cetera. So he's also being hurt by the ball this year. So, and I don't know how much weather warming up helps a batter that's going to play half his games at 72 degrees. Right.
That's right.
He's not going to get the benefit of the heat and humidity of Globe Life Field. Cause if that thermometer ticks over 72, they hit the button and that roof closes. In that park with the wind, et cetera, it just plays some, we don't have that much data, but it plays really well as a hitter's park with the roof open. The roof is just hardly ever open, at least once we get further on into the season. So yeah, I'm kind of with you there. So we got about another 10 or so minutes. We try to keep you folks around an hour, so you don't have to look at me for too much longer. Those of you that are actually, looking, any pitchers on your mind? What are you seeing for some pitching as far as the, guys that are a little over their head benefiting from the home runs? Martin Perez finally got his comeuppance. What's on your mind as far as pitching goes?
Let's start with Merrill Kelly. Is he a drop? He was not good last night. He has not been good lately. I think a lot of people expected he wouldn't be very good this year. He briefly was, and everyone was excited. Pretty bad the last little while. Like, he had the awful 2 innings, 8 runs game. But since then, 5 innings, 3 runs, 5 innings, 3 runs, 5 innings, 3 runs, 2 earned. one good start at Cincinnati, and then last night, 6 innings, 5 runs. He's walking a lot of batters. So he's walked at least 2 in 3, 6, 8 straight starts. And a lot of some of those starts, he's got 3 or 4 walks. I think in a 12-team league, this guy might be on his way out the door.
See, now again, it's all context because we all, it's the way we play the game. For me, he's a drop because he's in that range of, to me, he's a streamer. And maybe I'll look to see what he's got coming up the following week before I drop him. If I'm going to, if I only have to, you know, sit him 1 week, but I'm, you know, I get burned when I use Connor Pilkington, and sometimes you get, you know, lucky when you know, you pick someone up and performs well for a couple of starts. So he's in that, and he's not, he's good enough for me to, what does he have coming up?
Yep.
But I'm not, you know, I'm not sitting on him. And, you know, the other thing when I say to myself, if I drop him, and Fred picks him up, how upset will I be? And you know what? I sure, especially if it's you, but I'm not gonna lose sleep if I happen to lose someone like Kelly.
Okay, so would you sooner send, let's say there's a starter on waivers that you like, you gotta cut someone, would you cut Kelly or would you cut Ian Anderson, who's actually been a lot worse than Kelly so far this season? Continued to be bad last night, 4 innings, 4 runs, 6 hits, 4 walks. He has had very, very few effective starts lately.
Yeah, isn't this the typical conundrum of, you know, we look, our eyes go to ERA. ERA is relatable. When we're talking to our non-geeky friends, they understand ERA. But it's with Anderson, it's the whip versus the strikeouts. And I don't even think he's getting, you know, a high amount of strikeouts this season.
Strikeout rate, it's awful. It's 7.5 per 9.
So,
and that's with a high whip. So he's facing a lot of batters. Strikeout rate's poor. The walk rate's poor.
Yeah. So he's one of those guys where, you know, you probably drafted him because you thought he was going to break out, blah, blah, blah. So it's really hard to get rid of him, but I think you have to. And he may come back and burn because he has the skills to get it together and make you pay for the drop. But if he's not giving you strikeouts to go along with that whip, there's just nothing positive about what he's doing. So I will have, I would actually drop it. I think to answer your question, I would drop Anderson first, but it's not, you know, that's not a pro Merrill Kelly, you know, necessarily more than, yeah, Anderson is disappointing. Now he had just under a strikeout an inning last year. And I know we should be looking at percent, especially because he walks so many batters that his strikeout percent is probably lower than his K per nine, if you will, kind of relating the two of them. But Anderson, if that whip, yeah, that's just, as far as ratios go, ERA is more variable. You want to control your whip and you kind of let ERA take care of itself. And you don't want to add that whip onto your record.
Would you drop either of those guys for Mitch Keller, who was not good last night at St. Louis, but at St. Louis, a tough outing, 5 1/3, 2 runs, 8 base runners, only 2 strikeouts. Pitch mix change that I know a lot of people have been talking about. The last 3 starts have been a little bit better, although one of them had 5 walks in it. At the Dodgers, though, it's a tough matchup, and at least he came out of that alive. Would you drop either of those guys, for example, for Mitch Keller, which I guess is a whole set. We already talked about dropping them. Would you be interested in picking Mitch Keller up?
So if I, coming into this weekend, if I had either of those guys, would I have dropped them for Mitch Keller's 2-step? And that's probably right. Would not have. Okay. Again, I just, I do this to myself, and I know this isn't all about me, but I, by waiting on starting pitching and closers, I put myself in this scenario where I have to stream, but it's kind of hard to do so. And my research shows that. My research shows that the top 2 teams in a 15-team league are successful streaming, but the bottom 13 aren't. And whether that's skill or luck-based, I don't know. And that's what the way I found that out, or the research was, I took the staff that you drafted, the ERA of the 9 pitchers you draft, and all right, in their end of the season ERA, you know, that's the comparison number. is if you didn't make any moves. And then I compare that to what your actual ERA was, making the moves. And only one or two teams in each 15-team league improve on their, air quote, drafted ERA. So it's kind of like you have to do it to come in first or second, but it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
Or maybe you come in first and second because you do it, but you need to do it to do it. However way you want to phrase it. And so I'm kind of putting myself in that hole. Now, I'm actually out doing okay with pitching. Now, all right, so you do this strategy, you're supposed to crush it in bats. Well, Zola's not crushing it in bats, at least not so far. That's been the issue with what's going on there. But I'm trying to think who this week, maybe who would I have picked up, in this scenario, what to start. This isn't the greatest week to make.
It was not.
Yeah, to do that. And that's one of the things I talked about in the piece. And it's kind of leading me into when I do this next week, I'm actually going to provide, I'm going to point out all the pitchers using the NFBC and that ADP that, rostership level that are rostered in 50% or fewer leagues, and use those as kind of the cutoff as guys where they're, can you pick them up based on my rankings? And, I use a middle reliever in my rankings is kind of this is the cutoff point. Anybody ranked above this reliever you want to use, anybody ranked below this reliever you don't want to use, and anybody that has a 50% or less rostership, go to pick up. So the ones this week that would even be talking about were Keegan Thompson, David Peterson, Kyle Bradish, Flexen, Cueto, Alex Faedo, Justin Steele, Mitch Keller, Lyles, and Taylor Hearn. Mike Minor. I may have dropped Kelly for Faedo. I would have dropped Kelly Anderson for Chris Flexen, and I would have gotten burned.
He wasn't too bad.
Okay. You know what? Wasn't it one of those where he started out?
Hey, he gave up a homer right off the top.
All right. That's what it was. Yeah.
Then he settled in. He was okay.
Yeah. Okay. And I may have done it. I get to remember Cueto's matchups, but I may have done it for Cueto. So there weren't a whole lot, but that's those. I mean, I wouldn't know Thompson, obviously no Bradish. Keller would not have made the cut. Justin Steele, I'm sure you've had some talks with Jeff. It's one of those guys where we started him and he stunk, and when he's on reserve, he cruises.
Totally. So, I can't figure that guy out at all.
Yeah. So he's back to being, somewhat trustable again. But yeah, that's where I am with Anderson and with Kelly. Alex Wood. I thought he was pitching better than he was, but he was actually available in some leagues.
I asked you. So this has been a bit of a thing with the Giants this year. Like, I keep referring to Alex Cobb, who's injured right now, but not for long, as the unluckiest pitcher in baseball because his BABIP's like, 400. He's got an amazing ground ball rate. He's got an amazing strikeout rate. He's got a horrible ERA. It just doesn't add up. Wood's been like that a little, like, not to the same degree, but like that, like a lot of ground balls, strikeout rate solid, BABIP's high, ERA's high, FIP looks good. It seems like the Giants just aren't doing their pitchers a lot of favors this year, and maybe their luck will turn around at some point, although the players aren't changing. Wood was better last night, 6 innings, 2 runs, only 5 base runners. He's not giving up home runs. His walk rate's good. Strikeout rate's solid. He should be better than, like you said, you thought he was pitching well. Oh, I think we can make the argument he is pitching well. He's just not getting great results against a pretty easy matchup against Kansas City last night. He got results. I'm not ready to say he turned the corner last night, but somehow these Giants pitchers, when Cobb gets back too, they deserve a little better fate than they've had, some of them. And that's unusual to say for Giants pitchers.
No, it's true. I haven't checked into the, I know they've had some injuries, and we talk about their platoon as far as batting go. I haven't checked into their defense to see how much some of the injuries have affected their defense. I know that part of Brendan Crawford's turnaround last year was defensively as well. His defense was on the downswing, and he kind of recovered in that area, so I need to check there. I know third base has been a little unstable, so maybe there's something to do there, but they got Matthew Boyd coming back. At some point, not coming back, making his Giants debut. I'm interested in Matthew Boyd in what's it called, on that Oracle Park. You know, you have to be. If home runs are your issue, I'm interested in one of the power suppressing, one of the biggest power suppressing parks in the league, in Matthew Boyd. Anthony DeSclafani, I checked. I mean, he's not coming back tomorrow, but I still left him with some starts in my rest of season. So he should be coming back at some point. I'm kind of with you in that, you know, we want to, you know, it's so hard to find pitching. We want to be able to trust the Giants when we make that decision. Yes. You know,
yeah, absolutely. Yes, they're one of the teams, one of my major teams to trust, and they haven't been as trustworthy. By the way, note on that Matthew Boyd, he had a setback yesterday, he had to cut short a throw. So you're going to wait a little while longer.
Yeah, I check Friday. I do my updates on Friday.
Yeah.
So as of Friday, folks, things were looking okay.
Bit of a setback. Yeah.
I had an interesting conversation with Paul Sporer today on the SiriusXM show. He put out his top 100 starters for the rest of the season. And he had Alek Manoah at number 27. You know, as a fantasy analyst / Blue Jays follower, I mean, I think it's fair to say that, you know, by the tone of my voice or, you know, the coyness, I kind of disagreed. Where would you put Alek Manoah? Let's leave aside the career. You know, the rest of the season, if you were doing even for the next month, where would you have Alek Manoah on a starter list?
Yeah, so that, to me, that feels low in the sense of, you said it was, I think you said 27th.
Yeah.
So Manoah was drafted around the 27th starter, and right, like in drafts, without me going back and exactly checking, so he was drafted around the 27th starter. Since then, he's put up a 1.67 ERA and a 0.91 WHIP. Even his FIP's 280. So it's not like he's been lucky, but he's not all luck. So now in his career, we have 32 starts. So basically a full season of starts. Right. 17-3, 2.59 ERA, 0.99 WHIP. His strikeout rate's good. It's not incredible. He's a little over a strikeout per inning in his career so far. So I'd be interested to know from Paul, why so low on Manoah? He's also backed by a really good team. So he should get some run support. Jay's bullpen's not incredible, but it's good enough. It's good enough. He's not going to go 17-3 over his next 32 starts, like in his career. I get that. But I feel like Manoah, excuse me, should be in the top 15 at least. Is this a homer pick by me?
No.
What else does he need to do? We've got a full season of starts now. We've got a 0.99 WHIP,
right,
and 195 strikeouts.
Yeah, this
is deep in the games too, which a lot of guys.
To have people check out Paul's work, it's for free on FanGraphs. He does have a paragraph on Manoah justifying the pick, or you can go back and listen to us on SiriusXM. Today the show is in the bank. You can go back and listen to that. But the discussion I had with Paul was, and I think I'm not the only one. I think everybody does this in one manner, way, shape, or form. I'm thinking of Manoah, how I feel he'll be for his career, which to me is, elite. I think at some point we'll be talking about Alek Manoah among the elite starters. I have to flesh that out when I rank him for this season. All right, he's not elite yet. He's very good. So, you know, I think when I, if I off the head, top 10. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe not this year, you know, sort of thing. The thing that I'm a little concerned about, you mentioned the strikeout rate. It's down this season, at least so far. I have not done the deep dive. Is it not spin? Is it different pitches? Has it just faced an inordinate amount of teams that just don't strike out, and all he needs is 3 weeks of 10 per nine to get it to one per inning again. So, but I feel 27 is low. I don't think he's a top 10 guy yet, but you know, if I'm asked, you know, if I'm looking for a dynasty league pitcher, Alek Manoah is pretty close to the top of that list.
Yeah, for sure. I'd have him. Logan Gilbert would be right up there for me as another good young pitcher who I like. So I can see putting like Burns and Cole ahead of him. I get McClanahan has much higher strikeout rate, so you probably go in that direction. Alcantara kind of is Manoah, but even more better, like as far as not a high strikeout rate, but he really eats up innings, you know, and gets a lot of ground balls, low ratios. So he's better. Aaron Nola, I would take over Manoah because Aaron Nola doesn't always put it together, but the strikeout rate's always really good. After that, I feel like there's a large group of pitchers where there's not much to choose from, right? Like Joe Musgrove, what's the difference? They're both same amount of innings, pretty much same amount of strikeouts. ERAs are similar. Whips are similar. Doesn't seem to be much difference between those guys. Max Fried could be in there. Like I just mentioned, Logan Gilbert. Scherzer will be back at some point, but there's a lot of risk there. Zach Wheeler, I might put him higher for the rest of the season than Manoah. Yeah, I don't know. I think once you get past the first six or seven, then there's a lot of guys in a large group, but I think Manoah's in that group. Oh, Gausman. I forgot about Gausman. Gausman ahead of him, although Gausman's last couple starts haven't been quite as impressive. So
he throws the best splitter in the league, and the splitter is still the hardest pitch for major league batters to handle. So and he's not getting overmatched in the AL East at all, and he doesn't have to face his own lineup, which is a good thing. One more guy I know you want to talk about, we'll get to him in just a second, but going through the questions to reward those that have been hanging out with us, do we think that Sale's gonna be put in the bullpen? I if it gets him back to the big leagues, yeah, it's not a permanent move. It's to get Chris Sale back on the team. So it would not shock me if Chris Sale comes back and is in the bullpen. Then the same Don Coberlione also just anecdotally mentioned that he went with Trevor Rogers over Manoah. You know, Fred, back in the draft season, that was that a coin flip? Rogers and Manoah?
I would say so, yeah.
Yep. So I mean, you know, it's just, he's not, you know, it's just more of just, you know, narratively saying, you know, oops, you know, I messed up, but no, it just, that's the way things work. And Rogers had another poor start tonight. And I think you could put him in the, oh, you know, you drop Trevor Rogers, who would have thought, but without that changeup, he's just not getting it done.
Yeah, that exactly. And I actually have no Rogers shares, but I wasn't against getting him. Mm-hmm. And as high as he was drafted, we're talking about someone who had one good season so far, one good 25 start season last year.
Yeah,
like the numbers this year are awful. In a 15 team league, I think you have to hold him and hope he comes around, I guess. In a 12 though, yeah, I think you could consider dropping him. This is the time of the year where you start maybe running out of patience for some of these guys and you make drastic moves.
Right. No. So I know one other guy you wanted to mention, we're a little past an hour, but we'll go through it. Lance Lynn deserves a couple of our minutes. Did you catch any of his start last night?
No, but I was shocked by the results. Like, he gave up 10 hits to a Tigers lineup. I had just written up the Tigers lineup earlier in the day and how just incredibly bad they had been in June. They had one home run in June going into that game. They've been really bad. Anyways, he wasn't good. I think that just means, it's just another reminder that maybe when pitchers are coming back from a long-term absence, you got to be careful with those initial starts. I said I would start him because the Tigers are such a soft landing, but he couldn't convert that. So now I think he has to stay on your bench until you see something positive from him.
Well, actually, you saw something positive from the third inning on. He gave up 7 of those hits in the first two innings.
Right.
Kind of a victim of BABIP. I don't know if you caught it, but it was a very heated argument in the dugout between him and Joe McEwing, the third base coach. And after the game, Lynn said, oh, yeah, we were arguing over our favorite kind of steak. Word has gotten out that he was complaining about the defensive positioning.
Right.
And, you know, the shifting, and he wasn't happy. And I guess McEwing is probably in charge of that, I would have to surmise, based on it all. And Lynn's kind of old school. And in order to shift to be effective, you need to pitch into it, right? Yeah. I don't know if Lynn's arsenal is that sort of arsenal. You know, he's kind of a high rider sort of pitcher. I don't know that you could pitch into the shift when you're up in the zone with the four seamers so much, because you're trying to induce fly balls, you know, more than anything else. So I think he was just a little upset about that. Fired himself up. He pitched a lot better afterwards. Man, I don't like keeping guys on the bench until they have a good start, because you lost their good start. but it's a matter of how many bad starts do you lose before you get that good start.
That's right.
You know, it's that magic number. I'm still a little bit, I was down on Lynn in general because he, during the aging curve, dinged him lower than where he was going according, if you just draft off his numbers. I have an aging curve built in, so I was off of Lynn as far as that goes. That's fine. I still have to rank him and tell people what to do. Oh, I hate to say sit him on your bench, but I could be with you. He didn't pitch very well in the farm either during his rehab.
Yeah. So I'm willing to miss one good one if I have to, because I don't think it's coming maybe right away.
No, I think we agreed a little too much. I don't, you know, I know it's hard to disagree with Jeff as well, but maybe if he fill in again, we'll have to be a little more combative.
Try our best.
But I'd like to thank you for putting up with me for the hour in a few minutes. It was great catching back up with you again as far as, you know, good old times. Can you tell the folks a little bit what, other than this weekly RotoWire podcast, what you're now doing or what can we look for?
Yeah, so I've got some articles coming out. A trade article come out today about tips on sending the message that you send with your trade, like some etiquette tips and things like that, some effectiveness tips. Thursday, I've got an article coming out about pitchers with really high ground ball rates and how they've been faring so far this year, and maybe some that you may want to add or some that you may want to avoid.
Real quick, do you consider ground ball rate a skill or a trait?
I've never thought about that before. I guess I will think of it as a skill.
I think of it more of as a trait.
Okay.
Because I will take a Lance Lynn in a big ballpark with good outfielders. I want him putting the ball in the air.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, so I agree that more often than not, you'd like a low ground ball rate. High ground ball rate, I'm sorry, but there are scenarios where I don't mind if my pitcher isn't inducing ground ball. So if it's more often than not, I guess it's a skill, but you have to put that addendum in there. That's all. And we just did, so we got the job done. All right, folks, that's it. Jeff should be back next week. You know where to find Fred on Twitter at Fred Zinke MLB, me at Todd Zola. Happy that you joined us. And have a great week, and the guys will check back with you next Tuesday.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.